Hello, this is Marcia Clenard with the Pantograph for Monday, November 26, 2018. I'm going to begin with an article on the front page of today's Pantograph. City tax bills could see small drop. While Bloomington property owners likely will see little or no change in the city's share of their tax bills in 2019, substantial increases may be on the horizon to cover police and firefighter pension costs. City Manager Tim Gleason will present to the City Council at 6 p.m. Monday a proposed city property tax level of $20.28 million, which is up 1.09% from the current levy of $20.06 million. The Bloomington Public Library is also seeking a $4.871 million tax levy, up $48,236, about 1%, from last year's amount. Together, the two levies, totaling $25.15 million, are expected to yield a combined tax rate of $1.338 per $100 equalized assessed valuation, which is down slightly from $1.339 per $100 EAV for the prior year. The resulting property tax bill payable in 2019 for those two levies is expected to remain essentially unchanged at about $736 for a $165,000 house. That bill could have increased, however, to about $809 had an increase to a tax rate of $1.47 per $100 EAV floated by Gleason won support from aldermen. His intention was to shift the entire cost of public safety pensions to the tax levy, a practice used by the town of Normal and other municipalities. The city's police and fire pension obligation for next year will be in the range of $11.1 million, said Gleason. The property tax levy will make up $8.2 million, while the city's utility tax will contribute $2.5 million, leaving a gap of about $400,000. The council in 2014 adopted a funding plan mixing the tax levy and utility tax, but the utility tax isn't yielding enough to cover its share. So we're already exceeding the amount we are bringing in from the utility tax, said Bloomington Finance Director Scott Rothman. We're going to start eating away at the reserves this coming year. The reserves will be depleted around 2023 if the growing funding gap is not addressed, both Gleason and Rothman said. Had the council opted for the $1.47 per $100 EAV levy rate, it still would be lower than Normal's proposed preliminary rate of $1.4757 per $100 of EAV for next year, Gleason said. Alderman Jamie Mathey of Ward 1, David Sage of Ward 2, Maboka Malamwe of Ward 3, Karen Schmidt of Ward 6, and Scott Black of Ward 7 voiced concerns about raising the tax levy rate that much. Their concerns included property taxes already being too high, uncertainty over the state possibly increasing property taxes, the local economy possibly contracting, new construction growth slowing, and property values possibly declining. But a major concern for several aldermen is McLean County Unit 5 proposing to increase its own tax levy by 8.49%. I appreciate the very clear direction that the City Council has given, Gleason said. The clear direction is that they want to continue with the action that was taken in 2014, where the utility tax rate fills the gap that the property tax is not covering for the entire public safety pension obligation. The state has mandated that all municipal police and fire pensions have to be 90% funded by 2041. This council was even more aggressive, saying it wanted to work toward 100% funding to try and stay in front of increased pension costs, said Gleason. I think that was very proactive and a smart decision. With the 1.09% increases in the city levy, the estimated preliminary property tax rate would be $1.0789 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation. That is a slight decrease from the rate of $1.0797 per 100 EAV for taxes paid in 2018. The library's tax rate also is estimated to decline from $0.2596 per 100 EAV to $0.2591 per 100 EAV next year. Expected increases in city's tax base are behind the projection of lower tax rates. The preliminary EAV, which is based on the total taxable value of properties in the city, is estimated to be $1.880 billion compared to $1.858 billion the prior year. The next article on page 2 is the National Weather Service storm all kind of a mess. Cold temperatures will follow a winter storm that was expected to bury portions of northern Illinois under nearly a foot of snow, but McLean County was spared the worst of it. The National Weather Service in Lincoln issued a winter weather advisory for McLean County starting at 6 p.m. Sunday, ahead of the storm that is causing traffic delays, especially for those heading north. Traffic, for instance, was backed up as early as Sunday morning on Interstate 55 near Dwight. At least two flights at the Central Illinois Regional Airport, one to and from Chicago, were canceled on Sunday. The storm came on the final day of the Thanksgiving weekend holiday, one of the busiest travel days of the year. Rain started to fall early Sunday in Chicago and tapered off before restarting later Sunday afternoon. In Bloomington Normal, rain began to fall about 3 p.m. The National Weather Service reported snow in Galesburg and Macomb as early as 2:30 p.m. It's all kind of a mess, said Chris Gielhart, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln. The Bloomington Normal area was expected to get about 2 inches of snow before it ended after sunrise Monday morning, he said. The winter weather advisory that took effect at 6 p.m. Sunday was set to end at 6 a.m. Monday. Up to a foot of snow was expected in the Chicago area, where blizzard warnings went into effect early Sunday afternoon. In Peoria, about 4 inches were expected, but gusty wind could make for hazardous conditions throughout the state, Gielhart added. There will be some blowing and drifting, even in Bloomington Normal, he said. That should improve as the day goes along. Motorists, especially those heading north, should expect slick roadways and be extra cautious when driving into Monday morning. For regular updates on statewide road conditions, visit www.gettingaround-illinois.com. You can also follow IDOT on Facebook and Twitter. But cold temperatures will be here to stay for a few days. We are looking at temperatures around 24 degrees on Monday afternoon, but falling throughout the day, Gielhart said. It may be Thursday before the thermometer reaches 32 degrees. However, by the weekend, temperatures should be back around 45. Returning to the front page of the Pantograph, we have an article and headline, Junior High Students Turn Art into Business. BJHS program raises money for Baby Fold. Students at Bloomington Junior High School are channeling creativity, business principles, technical skills, and philanthropy into an art project to raise money for the Baby Fold. Since the beginning of October, students in the Learning is for Everyone, LIFE, Life program, which helps students with emotional and behavioral challenges, have spent their art classes creating home decor signage to sell at the school. We didn't really know what to expect, and the first batch sold out within like a half an hour, said Christina Frederick, the life program teacher. So then for the next hour and a half, teachers would come in and place orders. The lead teacher in the self-contained special education classroom, Frederick said, she and her assistants, Christine Hilke and Marcus Lewis, worked closely with students to help coach them through difficult moments. We try to help these students understand that trauma brings change outside our control, but healing brings change that is in our control, she said. The class named their art project turned fundraising business Knight's Craft, K-N-I-G-H-T-S, Craft, paying homage to the school mascot and the video game Minecraft. The project has given the students the opportunities to step away from traditional classroom and create a relaxed environment where they can all create something together, Frederick said. At home, Frederick cuts and stains the boards. Then the students take it from there. Between the four of them, they've recognized their own strengths and weaknesses when it comes to designing, sanding, painting, and lettering. We all play a part in the whole as a classroom, and so that's trickled into the business, because everyone kind of finds their niche and what they like and what they're good at, and they're able to do that task, so it's almost like an assembly line, Frederick said. When they first started and saw examples of what their signs could look like, the task seemed impossible. But once the first one was done, there was no turning back. Once they saw that they could do it, and it's been fun to watch that grow and, you know, watch the excitement in their eyes, Frederick said. Creating these signs has helped the students open up their perspective on what art can be and what kind of skills they didn't know they had. Instead of working on still life paintings, for example, their art class is more hands-on and has a bigger purpose, Frederick said. It's been cool to see the boys be able to have a sense of accomplishment, she said. You know, they've been able to create something from nothing, something beautiful that people are wanting to buy. The project has also spilled over into their math class, where Frederick has introduced business principles like profit, loss, and inventory, so the students can better understand how it all works. Their startup funding came from a Thrivent financial grant, which helped pay for most of the supplies and a few extra perks like t-shirts and thank you cards. Since October, Knight's Craft has made and sold more than 110 signs and raised over $1,000 for the Baby Fold. The nonprofit, which specializes in caring for children with emotional and behavioral disabilities, autism spectrum disorders, and children at risk for a variety of reasons, was chosen by the students since one of them had worked with the Baby Fold when he was younger. Frederick said that since so many people and organizations have helped her students, she sees this as an opportunity for them to give back. Teachers have made up the majority of their consumer base, but with the gift-giving holidays approaching, students have also bought the signs, and the Knight's Craft kids will soon be making a few to take home to their families. Frederick said the entire school community has been incredibly supportive of the Life Program project and have encouraged her to continue to pursue it. I'm really lucky and fortunate to be at a district where the administration is understanding of the purpose behind this, she said. They see it as an opportunity for them to try something new, and they see it as an opportunity for them to work together to open their eyes to something bigger than this class. Police arrest made in stabbing. A 16-year-old boy is in custody at the McLean County Juvenile Detention Center in connection with the stabbing of another youth Saturday at a park in Normal. Another teenage boy was found stabbed in the back Saturday afternoon at Anderson Park. Normal police were called to the scene shortly before 5 p.m. and found the boy near the playground. The youth's wounds did not appear life-threatening, said NPD. No details of the rest were immediately available on Sunday. Officers said the boy was speaking to paramedics as he was being loaded into an ambulance and taken to a local hospital, but but there was no other information on his condition Sunday evening. Police at the scene were using flashlights to look for unspecified items and said they had a description of a vehicle that left the scene. HCC to offer child care program to benefit parents taking evening classes. Starting this spring, parents taking evening classes at Heartland Community College will have child care services on campus. Heartland's youth evening care program will be available for children ages 5 to 13 whose parents are taking evening credit classes, adult education classes, or continuing education work-ready programs. Kelly Hill, Vice President of Continuing Education and Advancement, said students had requested a program like this, citing lack of child care as a barrier to taking classes. Some working parents can only take classes in the evening, said Hill. We hope this affordable evening care option allows more students to fit classes into a busy life schedule and provide support to both our adult students and their children. The cost will be $30 per week per child, and students can sign up their children weekly, monthly, or for the semester. Registration is open and can be completed online at heartland.edu/pmcare or by calling 309-268-8160. The program will provide supervision, activities, and homework help to children. It will operate 5 to 9:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday from January 14th through May 17th. Parents must be on campus while their children are attending the program. Hill said the children will be near, if not in the same building, where their parents are taking classes. The new program is different from the Child Development Lab that serves children ages 6 weeks to 5 years, and also is used for providing experience to students studying early childhood education. A minimum of 10 children is needed for the program, said Hill, adding that additional teachers will be hired if enrollment exceeds the maximum. And now for some sports news. Illini give Lovey extension through 2023. Whitman, hugely important offseason ahead after going 4-8. Actions speak louder than words, and University of Illinois Athletic Director Josh Whitman acted in regards football coach Lovey Smith on Sunday. The university announced a 2-year extension for Smith that will run through 2023 season. Smith is 9-27 in 3 years as head coach at Illinois and ended the season on Saturday with a 24-18 loss at Northwestern. Smith signed a 6-year, $21 million deal in March of 2016. The terms of the extension have not been finalized, and the extension is subject to Board of Trustee approval in January. This won't be a new contract, Whitman said. It's largely the same contract. We aren't tearing up what we have, and we'll add years to the end. We're still working on what some of those terms might look like. I don't anticipate any significant salary increases as part of the extension. We'll work through some of those in the weeks ahead. The extension comes ahead of what Whitman and Smith recognize as an important off-season as Smith heads into his fourth season as head coach. The class of 2019 will be Smith's third recruiting class after a roster overhaul when Smith took over. The University of Illinois is an incredible place to coach and teach, Smith said in a statement. We love living here in Champaign-Urbana and representing our state's flagship institution. We will continue working every day as we move our football program forward. Our new football performance center, the Smith Football Center, will be completed next summer and will be among the best in the nation. I want to thank Josh Whitman and Chancellor Robert Johnson for continuing to believe in what we are working to accomplish. Those of us around the program see the progress being made each and every day, and we expect to be competing for championships very soon. are incredible fans, and everyone on our campus deserve nothing less. Whitman, a former player, has spent plenty of time around the team and has seen growth off the field, though he maintains that there haven't been enough wins on the field. With an important recruiting class and two positions to fill on the coaching staff coming this offseason, Whitman says this was the best time to extend Smith. I've had the opportunity to study this team and see the way that we have grown in the program and steps that we have put in place, Whitman said. I recognize what the situation was when we arrived 3 years ago. I do think that stability is incredibly important when you find the right leadership, and I believe in Lovie Smith, and I believe in the head football coach. I believe in the people he's put around him. I recognize that we are entering into a hugely important offseason. We have identified a group of staff members who are key to our future success, and I think we have identified a core group of players who are coming back who are key to our future success. In addition, I think we need to go out and attract some new faces to that coaching staff, and we need to go out and recruit a few key pieces on the roster, whether it's from high school players, transfers, or fifth-year players. I believe this message is important for them to hear. We believe in what we're doing, and we have the stability that's necessary here to bring long-term success to Illinois football. That's why we made the move that we did today. So why now? Why after a season that had 4 wins, though 2 more than the Illini had last season under Smith, and is 2 weeks removed from a 63-0 loss to Iowa before losing by 8 to Northwestern on Saturday? Anytime you get a coach in football or men's basketball where they have less than 4 years on their contract, you start to leave them open to some criticism or some vulnerability in recruiting. We thought after this year it was important to send that signal, said Whitman. The Illini continue to rebuild after an influx of underclassmen saw considerable time on the field this season. Whitman and Smith believe those players will continue to develop and help the win total increase. We have a team that is 80% freshmen and sophomores, and a defense this year that had one senior who played significant minutes and started for us, Whitman said. Eventually, we have to go from a young football team to an experienced and mature football team, and this decision puts us in the strongest position to allow that maturity to happen, to allow us to retain the core group of guys who have gone out these last 2 years and gotten experience on the field. We look forward to helping them move along that path. I'm not going to sit here and say that we're pleased with the results of every game we've had this year. We're not. And some more football news. Plenty of returnees have SPAC eager for next year. Coach believes ISU poised to improve on 6-win season streak. Illinois State football coach Brock SPAC has declared a third straight 6-win season and a second consecutive year without an FCS playoff berth not good enough. Yet as SPAC peruses a roster that loses only 3 full-time offensive starters and 2 on defense, he believes with similar conviction that both of those streaks will be broken in 2019. Even with our youth, I felt we should have been in the playoffs this year. We've got a really good team coming back, no doubt, SPAC said. The program is in great shape. I think our team is in a very good spot. The Redbirds were in an awfully good spot with a 5-1 record before 4 straight losses knocked them off and out of the playoff picture. A season-ending 35-28 win over Youngstown State on November 17th gave ISU its 9th winning regular season in 10 years under SPAC. We were a couple of plays away from getting it done this year. We made some critical errors in critical situations, said SPAC. That's a sign of a young team. We have to learn how to win close games. And that's why I'm so excited about the Youngstown State win. It was a back-and-forth tussle, and we were able to pull it out. Quarterback Brady Davis returns for his second season at ISU after completing 56% of his passes for 1,935 yards, 19 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions. SPAC maintains it is unfair to compare the Memphis transfer's season to the first year of Indiana transfer Trey Roberson, who led the Redbirds to the FCS National Championship game in 2014. Trey started 20-some games in the Big Ten. He was much more polished when he came in, SPAC said. Brady didn't even have the whole summer with us. Having him around all off-season with all the young receivers, I'm excited to watch these guys. Redshirt Bryce Jefferson will battle Tristan Smith for the backup quarterback position. Also returning as tailback, James Robinson, who likely will earn his second first team All-MVFC honor on Monday. Robinson paced the Valley with 1,290 yards rushing and will enter his senior season fifth on the ISU career list with 2,545 yards. Who else will carry the football has yet to be determined. Markel Smith was second on the team with 562 yards, but did not receive a carry in the season finale while in SPAC's doghouse. Young backs Kevin Brown, Trenton Hatfield, and Brian Adams are candidates for increased roles, while SPAC could address the position with a transfer. Two of ISU's top receivers, Spencer Schnell and tight end Tyler Petkovich, are graduating. Schnell snared 65 passes for 872 yards, but freshman wideout Andrew Edgar was second with 45 catches for 746 yards, and Braxton Haley reeled in 20 for 259 yards. Receivers Taylor Grimes and Austin Nagel saw the field as true freshmen, and SPAC expects redshirts Stephen Hollison and Eric Rogers to contribute next season. The Redbirds are well-stocked at tight end with Robert Gillum, Tanner Talla, and redshirt Jacob Carl back to compete with Petkovich's snaps. Right tackle Donovan O'Day was the lone senior offensive lineman to start every game this past season. Tackle Drew Himmelman and guard Gabe Megason form a stout left side. Garrett Hirsch and Drew Bones both saw time at center, while Jared Reitz had starting experience at guard. I really like Peyton Ash. He will be at least a backup, if not a starter, next season, SPAC said of the 6'7", 290-pound redshirt tackle. He's got a great motor. Cole Anderson and redshirt Zach Miller and Peter Busson also could be factors on the line. Busson is a normal community product who is being switched from defense to offense for 2019. Versatile lineman Trey Georgie shifted from offense to defense this past season but could move back again if needed. The Redbirds ranked first in the MVFC in pass defense and second in scoring defense, total defense, and rushing defense, with only safety Mitchell Breeze and linebacker Zach Matthews as seniors. Travis, defense coordinator Niekamp, and our whole defensive staff have done an unbelievable job with these guys, said SPAC. They played plenty tough all year long, and we've got a lot of guys coming back. The entire defensive front will return in interior linemen John Ridgway, Jason Lewin, Jacob Powell, and Stephen Pokulski, and ends Romeo McKnight, Jason Harris, and Ryan Kuhl. Grayshirt lineman Jude Okolo will enroll at ISU in January. And that ends our first half, and we're going to take a short break now, and I will return with the second half of the Pantograph for Monday, November 26, 2018.